The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 2nd, 2021. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Manny Fidel of Business Insider joins us to talk news on this casual Friday. Meanwhile, the Labor Department reports that the U.S. added 916,000 jobs in March, up from 416,000 in February. Leisure and hospitality alongside construction contributed to the biggest gains. The official unemployment rate peaked at 15% in the pandemic, but true data was almost certainly higher than that. As corporations begin to speak out against Georgia and Texas's voter suppression laws, Republicans are spinning themselves as anti-corporate renegades who won't be bullied out of their structurally racist policies. That's unfortunately not their worst strategy. New Mexico follows New York in legalizing recreational cannabis, making it the 16th state in the country to do so. The United States and Iran have entered into indirect talks on reinstating the Obama-era nuclear deal that Trump scrapped. Why should they trust us? That's unclear, but let's hope they do. Whistleblower Daniel Hale faces up to 10 years in prison after pleading guilty to violating the Espionage Act, after leaking details about the U.S. drone program to what people believe is The Intercept's Jeremy Scahill. He's not going to reveal his sources. Free press and whistleblower activists have continued to ask the Biden administration for clemency or even to stop this prosecution to no avail. Representative Matt Gaetz continues to be mired in scandal as reports trickle out that Gaetz showed naked photos of women he allegedly slept with to colleagues on the House floor, and that the feds are looking into payments made by Gaetz in order to allegedly pay for sex, potentially with underage girls. More on that later. Finally, the United Nations warns of a looming civil war and, quote, bloodbath in Myanmar if the international community doesn't step in, as at least 536 civilians have been killed and 2,700 detained by security forces in 2 months of demonstrations. All this and more on today's program. Welcome to the show, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to begin the show talking about the continued testimony in the Derek Chauvin trial. This is an ongoing story, and because this testimony is televised, it just punctuates how much of a watershed moment this is in terms of the civil rights conversation in this country and how historical or historic this trial is. So David Ploeger, who was Derek Chauvin's supervisor in the third precinct, he testified yesterday, and the prosecution of Derek Chauvin asked him some key questions, and he provided some key answers. First, he said that Derek Chauvin did not mention using force or putting a knee on George Floyd's neck in their conversation following George Floyd's death, which seems key and paints the picture for the prosecution, thankfully, that Chauvin was trying to obfuscate or hide his role in the death of George Floyd. And then David Ploeger said this, which is very key.
Based on your review of the body-worn camera footage, do you have an opinion as to when the restraint of Mr. Floyd should have ended in this encounter?
Yes.
What is it?
When Mr. Floyd was no longer offering up any resistance to the officers, they could have ended the restraint.
And that was after he was handcuffed and on the ground and no longer resisting?
Correct.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Why this is important is because part of what the defense is claiming is that this was just a part of Derek Chauvin's job. Now, this is his supervisor saying that he did not handle the situation appropriately. All of this is key to just dispelling what the defense is trying to build up, even though we are all human beings with two eyes that could see that for 9 minutes and 29 seconds, Derek Chauvin knelt on George Floyd's neck. And that doesn't seem to be appropriate policing tactics. But just for the record, and just to continue to dismantle what the what the defense is trying to put up, that is key testimony. And as we've seen throughout the trial, the visceral, emotional testimony of the people that witnessed George Floyd's murder, who have guilt that they have to carry for absolutely no reason because of the actions of Derek Chauvin, because of all that comes up with it, the baggage of institutionalized racism that comes out in police violence and in many other ways, in legislation and all these structural issues. There's so much there. But for the narrow purposes of finding Derek Chauvin guilty, which he is guilty, I mean, I'll editorialize, I'm a talk show host, I can say that. This is key testimony, because now all the defense has in their quiver, to borrow Sam's phrase, is the George Floyd was a drug addict defense, which is basically on its face a way to say, oh, well, that's what caused his death, not the kneeling on his neck, even after his pulse stopped for 9.5 minutes. They, on its face, they're trying to say that it was his health issues that caused his death. But in reality, what they're trying to do is a lot more insidious, which is trying to paint the picture of a delinquent drug addict who kind of deserved it, didn't he? And those are some of the subtle ways that they're trying to influence the jury. And that's really what makes, I think, a lot of what the defense has been doing so gross. We saw this yesterday when they tried to paint the witness, who was an MMA fighter, as an angry black man. They may not understand that that's what they're doing, but I don't even want to give them that grace or that.
Oh, yeah, they understand.
They understand. You know, it's just for the sake of an argument, you can say, oh, well, like, maybe they're just doing what the law intends. But really what the reality is that they are knowingly stoking specific trigger points and stereotypes about George Floyd's drug addiction history and about the witnesses and their reaction to it. And all of this is incredibly gross.
Yeah, I think one thing that, like, of course, everybody deserves a right to trial, right? Not everybody deserves million-dollar lawyers that can help, you know, run some of these tried and tested plays on jury. And I think that, like, cops should just get public defendants. I don't think they should have anything beyond that. If it's good enough for the people that they're trying to lock up, it should be good enough for the cops.
Yep. Well, I couldn't agree more. And, you know, you have to wonder the mental gymnastics with which some of these lawyers go through, these high powered lawyers, in order to take this kind of case. They have to think they're doing something moral or justified in some way. But it blows my mind the cognitive dissonance of people who want to make money and then work backwards from that conclusion and then morally justify it. That seems to be, for some high-powered lawyers, a daily occurrence, those kinds of mental gymnastics. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Manny Fidel of Business Insider, a funny tweeter, a friend, will be joining us to talk about the news.
Today's show sponsored by Magic Spoon. Magic Spoon cereal has the amazing flavors you love, but without all the bad stuff. With Magic Spoon, there is 0 grams of sugar. Yes, 0 grams of sugar. 13 to 14 grams of protein, only 4 net grams of carbs in each serving, and only 140 calories per serving. It is keto friendly. It is gluten free. It is grain free. It is soy free. It is low carb, and it is GMO free. Magic Spoon will be releasing two amazing flavors this month for a limited time only: cookies and cream and maple and waffle. Told you, Saul, literally my son, literally thanked me for getting cookies and cream the other day. It was one of the sweetest things in the world. It also made me feel like maybe I'm not that great of a parent that your kid comes and thanks you for getting a good tasting cereal. Nevertheless, he thanked me, and it's great. And I don't have to worry about him eating a junky, sugar-filled treat in the morning. It doesn't have sugar. 0 grams. It's not just cookies and cream and maple waffle. You can also build your own box with these flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, peanut butter, and cinnamon. For me, I think people know I'm a cinnamon guy. Peanut butter and cocoa come in close second. I got to say, I like the maple waffle too, but I'm a cinnamon guy. If you're listening from Canada, good news. Magic Spoon now ships there too. Check it out, folks. You will not be disappointed. Like I say, Saul loves the cookies and cream. I like it too, but for me, I'm a cinnamon guy. Go to magicspoon.com/majority report to grab the new limited edition cookies and cream maple waffle or a custom bundle of cereal to try it today. Be sure to use our promo code MAJORITYREPORT at checkout and save $5 off your order. This offer is now good anywhere in the U.S. or Canada, but only when you use our code at checkout. Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember, get your next delicious bowl of guilt-free cereal at magicspoon.com/majorityreport. Use the code MAJORITYREPORT to save $5 off. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode. And also, thank you for my breakfast that I had today. If there has ever been a year to make the moms in your life feel loved and appreciated on Mother's Day, I got news for you. This is the one. You can honor that special woman in your life with a heartfelt, sentimental gift that is not just a really ultimately a gift for them, but it's a gift that the whole family can cherish forever. And that is Storyworth. What is Storyworth? It is an online service that helps every mother, could also be for your father, your cousins, and your grandparents, but every mother figure in your life, share stories through thought-provoking questions about their memories and personal thoughts. It's a great way to engage with them, especially if you can't be together in person. Every week, Storyworth emails a different story prompt. Questions that you probably never thought to ask, like, I don't know, what is the best advice your mother ever gave you? Or what's the best advice your father ever gave you? What's the best advice your friend ever gave you? But it's not just about advice. It's like, it can be, I don't know, what was your favorite car? You'd be surprised what gets people talking. The weekly stories make your family feel close, even though you're not together. And this, to me, is the best part. After 1 year, Storyworth compiles all of your mom's stories, including photos, and makes it into a beautiful keepsake book that is shipped for free. Look, this is a great way to keep in touch with people, but also it's a great way, for me, it's a great way to provide for your kids things that they wouldn't know about their grandparents. But it's also a great way as a kid to find out stuff about your parents that you never really thought about. I don't know. When you're a kid, you grow up with your parents. You never really, well, I don't know, some people do, but I'm not the type of person who was like going to ask my parents, I don't know, banal questions and then remember what they said. This is a great way to both keep in touch and to keep memories alive, and also just sort of get, you know, for kids to get a sense of like what life was like 50 years ago or 30 years ago. I don't know. It's fascinating. Give your mom the most meaningful gift this Mother's Day with Storyworth. Get started right away with no shipping required by going to storyworth.com/majority. You'll get $10 off your first purchase. That's storyworth.com/majority for $10 off. Hey, folks, very difficult to find the time to sit down and learn things, right? Hectic time, stressful time. But even when you're even more busy, it's tough to find that time. Well, my recommendation, an app I've been using for a couple of years now, I guess, Blinkist. Blinkist is for anyone who cares about learning, but doesn't have a lot of time. What Blinkist does is it takes the key ideas and insights from over 4,000 nonfiction bestsellers in over 27 categories, and it gathers them together in 15-minute text or audio recordings. They call them blinks. And you use the blinks to get into a topic quickly, or you use the blinks to find new topics to grow from, or use a blink to figure out which books you want to spend more time reading or listening to more deeply. And speaking of listening, Blinkist now has even teamed up with popular podcast creators to blink those for you too, so you can get to the heart of a podcast episode fast. 15 million people are already using Blinkist to broaden their knowledge in 27 nonfiction categories like self-improvement, management, mindfulness, and more. For me, I've gone through this with you in the past, but for me, I use Blinkist in a couple of different ways. One, there's like how-to stuff that I feel like it would not be a bad thing for me to know, like how to work more efficiently or how to be more friendly to people and have people like you more, frankly, or, you know, to just, I have some social challenges and, but I don't want to sit down with a full length book to read about them. I don't want to hear all the, with all due respect, some, I know the formula for these books. What they do is they tell you the certain problems and this stuff. I just want to get to the heart of matter. Well, Blinkist allows me to do that. And then there's also books that I feel like I should know about, but I may not necessarily want to read them, like Becoming by Michelle Obama, one of their bestsellers on there. With all due respect, I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I would like to know the takeaways. I'd like to get a sense of like what Michelle Obama thinks. Blowout by Rachel Maddow, same dynamic. I want to know the key points, but I don't necessarily have full time to read it. So I check it out that way. And right now, Blinkist has a special offer for just our audience. You go to Blinkist.com/majority report. You start your free 7-day trial, and then you get 25% off of Blinkist premium membership. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T. Blinkist.com/majority report to get 25% off and a 7-day free trial. That's Blinkist.com/majority report. Check it out today. Reminder, folks, you can become a member of the Majority Report at jointhemajorityreport.com. Jointhemajorityreport.com. And when you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, but you also get the fun half and you support the program. Thanks so much to our members. We could not do it without you. I will be back joining Emma, who's done an amazing job this week. I will be back on Monday. But now, back to Emma.
Thank you very much, Sam. Thank you for saying I've done an amazing job. We would like to welcome to the show Manny Fidel, Business Insider columnist. How are you doing today, Manny? Oh, we can't hear you.
Yeah, maybe the wrong input on the mic.
Oh. Either way, Manny is a writer at Business Insider. Still can't hear you.
All right. How about now?
There we go.
That is my fault, guys. thank you for having me. And thank you for giving me a reason to get dressed for the first time this week.
totally get that. I sometimes behind the scenes look when Sam isn't here, I will wear a nice sweater to the office, but some basically sweatpants on the bottom. Not today. I've got jeans on because it's casual Friday, you know?
Oh, yeah. I'm fully short shorts under this to be very transparent with the viewers.
Well, I'm glad we communicated that with them. So, you know, obviously the most substantive and important news story of this week. What did you think about Marjorie Taylor Greene's CrossFit video?
You know, I had a bit of contention with that one because I was, at the time the video dropped, very sick from the side effects of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but I simply could not resist. I got on Twitter to dunk on her. But I was told that, you know, as dumb as those pull-ups look, they are actually some form of real pull-ups in like CrossFit, I guess. Which, you know, I don't work out in the slightest, so I couldn't have possibly known. But, you know, it makes sense that she needs to work out because, you know, I don't work out because no one wants to kick my ass. And it makes total sense that she might need to stay in shape.
Yeah, she needs some sort of defense from, yeah, obviously the libs coming after her. But yeah, okay. My point is that may be CrossFit workout technique, but it seems designed to blow out your shoulder. And the whole point of pull-ups is not to use your momentum and swing back and forth. I am fascinated by this dynamic. I never knew what CrossFit entailed. And now that I do know, it's as culty and nonsensical as QAnon. So it seems to kind of sense, right?
Yeah, someone who does not work out, I look at that video, I cannot possibly imagine what benefits that motion is doing for the body.
Yeah, well, on to...
Can I just say one point on that is people should look... I mean, people shouldn't, but if they are very, very curious about are these, in fact, dangerous, if you search butterfly pull-ups or I forget, like, they have some other kind of name, like, Kepping or something like that, but people think that because they have a name that they're safe. But if you look up that, like, butterfly pull-ups or CrossFit pull-ups fail, there are way too many videos of people swinging like that and they lose their grip on the upswing and do a somersault onto their head. I only needed to see one video of that to basically cringe at the idea that people are doing this across gyms in America.
Well,
a little bit of a static, just a heads up for future talk.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, again, you could get your chin under the bar there. And like what people described to me on Twitter after I tweeted about this and Tim Pool responded was that the CrossFit is just basically about reps being increased. And it doesn't seem to, you know, it's like a rep competition, but doesn't matter what the reps are or what they do, just flail your body around, I guess.
When doing it the right way looks like a fail, I can only imagine what doing it the wrong way looks like.
Right, exactly. On to Matt Gaetz, though, because since it's Casual Friday, we want to have a little bit of fun. Even though, again, we're all having fun at this guy's expense because he's a total frat boy jerk, but there is a 17-year-old victim, apparently, that is involved in this, or a woman now, but who was 17 at the very least at the time, I think in 2018, that these accusations are made. So I want to make that clear. But with that aside, Matt Gaetz is all of these stories coming out about his completely abhorrent behavior. So he's tied to this guy, Joel
Greenberg.
Yeah.
That's his last name, who just
very dark figure, like tied to like 33 charges of like all sorts of things. And I mean, you can go on. I have a list here that we'll get to later.
Sure. So tied to this guy, Joel Greenberg, who is now being indicted himself for potentially sex trafficking a minor, as well as the list that Matt is going to pull up. Now Matt Gaetz is being alleged to show naked photos of women to his colleagues on the House floor, which, okay, that's really douchey, but it's not a crime. But the other thing that we're going to play in a second from the Daily Beast, apparently him and his buddy, Joel Greenberg, broke into came in after hours to a facility that manufacturers licenses and was creating off the books fake IDs. And Matt and I were talking about this before the show. What it seems to be, and I don't know if this is what happened, but connecting the dots, were they getting fake IDs for their underage girlfriends?
Well, yeah, I mean, the question is, so there's this text message to Greenberg saying, hey, did you come in over the weekend? Because this person came in and saw these IDs basically spread out over the desk. And these IDs are there to be destroyed safely and securely. So instead of being safely and secured by the state, this guy is spreading them out and allegedly doing some fake ID stuff in it. Now, what sort of position does that put any young woman who gets a fake ID from this operation, right? Like, I mean, ultimately, you don't have to really, like, I think the implications are pretty clear there. But also, this Joel Greenberg, is my mic, I don't know, okay enough for me to read this? So Yeah, like used state database to create fake IDs, allegedly stalking a political opponent. Also defrauded tax collectors by resurrecting defunct companies to claim COVID relief payments, up to $400,000. You know, like you bribe an old employee, say, "Hey, this company still exists, right?" And all of a sudden, you get some COVID relief bill. Also, cryptocurrency scamming. This seems almost like there's bigger problems in Florida that this guy was able to get away with this, because basically charging the government to say, "Hey, we're going to buy these crypto mining things. They're going to do something with these IDs that we're supposed to get rid of securely." Instead, he just ended up selling those Bitcoin mining machines to other people and pocketing the funds on that. So that's going to be my money. And then also, I see there's one more detail with Bitcoin mining that don't have right now, but I'll see if I can pull it up. Oh, yes. This is from the Sun Sentinel. In a slew of examples, authorities say Greenberg claimed he was going to use $200,000 for an investment in his office when he actually planned to use the money to buy cryptocurrency for himself. The scheme also involved a business Greenberg established, Government Blockchain Systems, LLC, the indictment states. Among other allegations is that Greenberg set up an Amazon account for the money, which he used to sell cryptocurrency mining machines that he purchased with the funds from the tax collector's office. So, I mean, an insane run of just criminality that you wonder, like, what else are we not seeing, right?
Gates is BFF, just to clarify. But yeah, Manny, weigh in on all of that. Ridiculousness.
There seems to be a deeper level of scum that we were not originally aware of. I mean, on the surface, we kind of all know Matt Gaetz, right? Like, we all know someone who would behave like Matt Gaetz if they were given the platform and the resources. And we've all definitely met... Oops, there is a siren going by. Hold on. Sorry, guys. That's New York City, guys. All right. And we all definitely know someone who is, like, seemingly legally obligated to tell you that they had sex with someone, right? Like, Matt Gaetz is... probably, I think he's like the personification of that Lonely Island song, "I Just Had Sex," right?
Yeah, exactly.
But as Matt was just saying, this all seems to be connected to like a much more worrisome form of criminal activity that we're just gonna have to like let this investigation play out to reveal. And that's been a part of my I've felt a bit conflicted, because if all this stuff is true, then yes, as you said at the top of the segment, there is a, you know, victim involved. But I do, on the other hand, feel some level of catharsis, right? That like Matt Gaetz, on an unforced error, is just confirming all of our suspicions about him.
Yeah. And the fake ID thing is what fascinates me too. And I know we're returning to that, but before the show, I was just talking about how I used to, when I was 16 or 17 and, you know, I had my first drink and I would, you know, be going to parties with my friends in high school. I used to have this fantasy of like, what if I could break into the DMV and make my own fake ID and I wouldn't have to worry because it would scan. It would be so cool, as opposed to, I think I was using my friend's cousins and, right. 5'2" and I'm like 5'8". She was blonde and blue eyed and I have brown eyes. It's just like terrible. So it's just such a, and I used to just think about all, like, that would have, for me at that age, if there was a guy like Matt Gaetz and, you know, I wasn't repulsed by him, which I would have been, that would have just put me in an incredibly vulnerable position. And it seems like we're, you know, there's only two scenarios here. They were using the IDs for themselves or for other people who weren't underage, or they were getting fake IDs for young girls that they were paying to sleep with them with other things. And neither of those things are legal or good.
Yeah, that latter part is part of the, I think, I have to double check, but I think that's included in the legal definition of some forms of trafficking, right? Where you're procuring legal seeming documents for underaged people. So
it seemed to be useful in trafficking.
Yeah.
Access to official document.
Yes. Yeah, as it seems like as the days go, Matt Gaetz might be going to jail.
Yeah.
We have the voicemail that he left, if you just want to introduce this, Emma.
Yeah, so I guess somebody who was critiquing Matt Gaetz on Twitter, a woman, she received this voicemail from Matt Gaetz and his little sidekick, Greenberg, here. She didn't welcome this kind of contact. She was a state legislature, Representative Anna Eskimani, and she was critiquing Matt Gaetz in 2019, and then they both left this voicemail for her, which is bizarre.
My dear Anna, this is your favorite tax collector. I'm up in the panhandle with your favorite U.S. Congressman, Mr. Gaetz.
Hi, Anna.
And we were just chatting about you and talking about your lovely qualities. And
we think you're the future of the Democratic Party in Florida.
Well, see, I know you're the future of it, so there's no thinking involved. Anyway, if you get this and you feel like chatting, give me a shout back. Hope you're well. Hope you had a nice 4th. Later.
Can you imagine getting that unwarranted call from somebody, not, you know, even who you know in a friendly way and on a political level, but somebody who you've been criticizing, and then you get that voicemail?
Yeah, the answer to that question is no. I cannot imagine that. It seems like these two are like the worst version of like, you know, those like raunchy teen comedies, like a duo in one of those movies, except this time they're criminals.
Yeah, it's just super bad gone super worse.
What did you think of, if you don't mind me asking, the kind of discourse on Twitter yesterday that if the only part of the allegations are true is that Matt Gaetz paid to have sex with someone, then really we really shouldn't be talking about this?
Yeah, I wanted to get into that too, because I think that there is, at least in leftist circles, I mean, this is so insular, but hopefully this pretends for, or, you know, shows some promise for the broader conversation around sex work. I don't care if Matt Gaetz was having sex with women for money who were above age and it was a consensual situation. And there's a tendency, I think, to hypocrisy shame just based on his kind of puritanical politics and being of the Republican Party. But he doesn't even represent that part, but he will be a hypocrite and a spokesperson for that part. But I think the hypocrisy shaming should come second to the number one priority, which is normalizing a more humane discourse around sex work that doesn't make it so salacious. And what's your thoughts, Manny?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. It's like, we should be able to, you know, can we make fun of Matt Gaetz? Yes, absolutely. But if we consider ourselves on the left or even liberals, I don't think he should be in jail just for that aspect. But then on the other hand, I do feel like my version of leftism is beginning to exclude people who suck. So, you know, that means at the end of the day that I am allowed to pay for sex, but Matt Gaetz is not allowed to pay for sex in my book of leftism. So, you know, I'll have to get back to you when I figure that rule book out. But
yeah, exactly. I mean, let's turn away from Matt Gaetz for a second.
Can I just want to bring up one more note, because you talk about with that voicemail we just played where Gaetz and Greenberg said, we think you're the future of the Democratic Party. You mentioned this, but this is the tweet that got Greenberg in hot water locally. And I just want to share this to get an idea of what kind of guy this guy is. So this was in 2018. And Joe Greenberg tweets out, very simple question, name just one society in the developed world that has benefited in any way from the introduction of more Muslims, just one, asking for a friend. And so that representative that they called reached out to him saying, hey, here's some actual like people you should reach out to. Clearly you don't have deep roots in the Muslim community that you could say something like that. And that's how she was repaid, by basically getting those kinds of messages.
Awesome. Yeah. So just proving the point that he, a true red-blooded non-Muslim American, is contributing to society.
The one last thing about Greenberg, and in that New York Times piece, there was a quote that said, one of the women who had sex with both men also agreed to have sex with an unidentified associate of theirs in Florida Republican politics, according to a person familiar with the arrangement. And I'm dying to know who that person is. Like, that guy is sweating bullets right now. I don't know, like, if you have any guesses, but like, there it'd be interesting to see like another like medium to big name caught up in this whole thing.
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, my mind first goes to Marco Rubio, but he's too much of a goody two shoes. I just can't really see.
Yeah, that would be awesome, but.
But it is, we mentioned this when the story broke, and again, we'll get off Matt Gaetz soon. But the Florida as a haven for underage sex trafficking is becoming a theme, as seen throughout the Jeffrey Epstein files. It's just, there's so much that goes on down there, so much nefarious and like criminal activity based on. I think a number of factors, but I just find that through line to be a little bit fascinating about what we're seeing down in Florida. But let's talk about Biden. So Biden unveiled his infrastructure bill, I guess, 2 or 3 days ago, $2.25 trillion, a lot smaller than he had even initially anticipated or had floated. Progressives are critiquing the size of it, especially because this is supposed to be over 10 years, and yet the infrastructure package is only $2.25 trillion, and especially because Joe Manchin had signaled, let's go $4 trillion, and yet Biden starts with $2.25 trillion, and the climate change provisions aren't even the whole package. So what are your thoughts there? What are your thoughts on how the House is going to respond to it, especially with someone like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez speaking out about it? And why Biden went smaller when all indicators showed that he might have gone bigger based on his desire to be stronger than Obama, as Axios kind of laid out, et cetera.
Right. I have a couple thoughts. And the first is that I'm always baffled as to why Democrats start lowballing, start the position by lowballing. In my cursory, like, Schoolhouse Rock understanding of like how a bill gets passed, there's an ideal lifespan, which is like the bill starts ambitiously, and then if there's contention in the Senate, like, it gets whittled down into like a lame version of the bill, but it's still helpful in some degrees. But Democrats are unique in that they seem to start with the lame version. One reason, I think there's a couple reasons that we find by talking about this, but it seems like the prevailing one is that Biden thinks that the bill has a better chance if there's some bipartisan support, or at least, you know, starting with a kind of playing Sweden with the bill. But I think that's a mistake that Obama has famously made many times. The one example I can think of came from his new book, where he mentioned that, you know, he ordered some drone strikes because he couldn't afford to look quote unquote soft to Republicans. And as we know, like, the world is demonstrably worse because of those drone strikes. And I think the number of innocent civilians killed during the Obama administration is like over 800. And so, yeah, I don't know that I can't think of any other reason why the left, in terms of politics, starts with the lame version of the bill. Like, I cannot wrap my brain around it.
Well, to me, for Biden, it's just this old school Reagan philosophy of not going too big, not allowing people to see what government can do with all of its might, and just kind of performing fiscal responsibility. And Matt has said this, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it's almost a disciplinary tool in order to tell the American public, no, put ruler on the hand. Ow, I kind of hurt myself there. This is what you can expect from government, and this is what you can't expect from government. And so
after the stimulus package wasn't whittled down and I was pleasantly surprised, this seems to be a signal that Biden is going to at some point revert back to who we thought he was. The Bears are who we thought they were, and Biden is who we thought he was.
Yeah, which is disappointing because, as you said, there was so much rhetoric during the campaign season about how much was going to change. Not from Biden, obviously. Biden said nothing's going to change, but just from people who, you know, kind of grabbed us by the wrist and made us vote for Biden. There was so much talk about how progressive he was going to be, and even after the COVID relief bill passed, people were saying this is the most progressive thing ever, and this is something we can look towards. You know, it's an indication of what Biden's presidency might be. But yeah, with this infrastructure bill, it definitely should temper our expectations.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate, but it is a reminder of who we are dealing with here. And luckily, we had a clip from Ocasio-Cortez on in the from yesterday, where she was speaking to Rachel Maddow, or maybe it was 2 days ago, saying how that's a starting point for what they're going to put forward in the House, and they're only going to build up from there. She wanted a $10 trillion bill. But really, I mean, if you are guided not by this managerial instinct, not by a kind of political brand, as far too many politicians are, you would be on Ocasio-Cortez's side of what the scope needs to be in order to adequately prepare this country to deal with the climate crisis, especially if this bill is meant to target, climate change over a 10-year period, as opposed to say, okay, $2.25 trillion for 2 years, fine, go back to the trough in two, whatever. But that's not what Biden is saying that this is going to be. So a bit of a bring down to earth moment from what we experienced with the stimulus package, in my view.
Yeah, and we can probably unfortunately expect that with some of the other platforms that Biden was talking about during the campaign. For example, we've already heard from Biden himself that he's not interested in doing the $50,000 student loan debt forgiveness. He's interested in doing $10,000, which, yes, that would still help me immensely, but is not adequate for so many people who owe that much or more. So yeah, we have, like, you know, we might have been a little bit misled by how progressive, in fact, the COVID relief bill was, and probably smart to take it slowly.
Yeah, I got wrapped up in it myself, just in terms of, you know, being like, what? Biden's not budging from this figure, but here we are, back where we started. So before we let you go, this is just something I wanted you to get your take on, because you write some great columns over at Business Insider. Everyone should check it out. You follow right-wing BS as well as anybody. This cancel culture stuff, they're hammering it. I think it's beginning to break through. But so much of their effectiveness, especially on Fox News, in terms of just repeating a talking point over and over again, it feels like it's been sapped of energy to some degree in the Biden era. Sam says this when he's on the show. There really was no response to the relief bill. There was no let's scare about the $1.9 trillion figure. I mean, they sort of performed it, but they knew it, even in their hearts, that it wasn't effective. And so, like, the right-wing media machine is a bit broken by Biden. I think part of this is because Biden's a white man, and so, like, the Obama fear tactics aren't as Obama-era fear tactics. Aren't as potent, but what's your take on that? Because to me, it just doesn't seem like their Dr. Seuss nonsense is breaking through in the way it had been, say, 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Yeah, not only does it not seem to be as effective as they would like, but it also it's a head scratcher for me, because I don't think cancel culture in general is like some prevailing issue that we need to figure out like what's up with it. But I do think there's probably some minor aspects of it that are right. Like the idea that, you know, like, we might have to figure out what it looks like for someone to apologize and accept an apology from someone. But the way that Republicans and some, like, pundits are trying to convince us to that point is so embarrassing that I don't even consider the more legitimate aspects of the argument. If you look, for example, you'll have to remind me her name, the woman who stepped down from her Teen Vogue editor in chief role.
Alessi
McCammond.
Yes. Just because I don't know if
So she, when she was a teenager, did some pretty vulgar racist tweets against Asian Americans. And all these years later, she accepted a job at Teen Vogue as the editor in chief. And then the tweets resurfaced. She had already apologized for them, but this is a very contentious moment for Asian Americans in this country. And so she stepped down, which seems all fine. Like, she made a mistake and she's trying to take accountability for it. And, you know, people who are, you know, the types on Twitter who are talking about cancel culture and this is all terrible, had some legitimate points about how we should allow someone to apologize and what kind of punishments they deserve in actuality. But when you wrap those legitimate arguments around Mr. Potato Head or like the Paw Patrol, like, it's really hard for someone who you might otherwise convince to give a single shit about your argument if you're talking about like these children's toys and Dr. Seuss, where like, I think it was like one or two Dr. Seuss books that had racist text in them that they're taken off of online stores, not even like the classics. My whole take on this whole thing is that these people might actually convince some people that their portions of their argument are legitimate if it weren't wrapped around in such stupidity.
Yeah, I mean, to me, they're not interested in having that nuanced Teen Vogue conversation, which, that's the outlier. I mean, I she'd already apologized for those tweets, to my understanding, and Teen Vogue still kind of made her resign, and she was a child. That's like when it goes, I don't even know if I want to call it cancel culture, because it's just the right wing, First Amendment ridiculous trope bastardization of it all over again. But yes, in that isolated incident, I totally agree that it's way too far. But they're making it into the next cultural issue to hit at the hearts of conservative voters and motivate them to go out. And really what it's about for them is, your white culture is disappearing. Things are changing around you. You're not the hegemonic force that you once were. And that's what they're talking about under the guise of actually caring about more nuanced conversations like the Teen Vogue one that you just mentioned.
Exactly. And it's hard to say whether that this culture war that they're bringing about, it will have any real effects on the country at large. But I do wonder how it is impacting their like viewership. Like, do Fox viewers care about Mr. Potato Head and Dr. Seuss?
They're in trouble, allegedly. I mean, or at least they were after the election. So Trump viewers not happy with them for acknowledging reality.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, we'll see. We'll have to see what happens. But it does seem like a very trivial thing that will hopefully go away soon.
Absolutely. Manny Fidel, columnist over at Business Insider. Where can people check out your work?
Yeah, so like you just said, I'm a columnist at Business Insider. If you go to my Twitter, which is just at Manny Fidel with no space, all my links are there in my bio. So yeah, thanks for having me on. This was a lot of fun.
Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's response to Biden immigration policies. All right. So Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, representative from New York 14. You may have heard of her. She went on, I'm not exactly sure what this was, but it was essentially a Q&A of some sort in which she touched on Biden's immigration policies, comparing them to the Trump administration. I think there's a complex conversation here based on her her comments. So let's take a listen.
First thing I want to say is that the fact that this keeps happening over and over and over again is a political failure by both parties.
If we just stop it there, nobody really has any problem with it. And then now we'll get to the part that people are sharing this for. And we should say, like, this was just posted by The Hill. And so, yeah, the context for it, it wasn't immediately clear to me.
She went on. I mean, I've seen other clips from this, and there was more Biden critique than what is shown in this video, I will say. So,
both parties. And I want to be very clear about that, because I don't want to draw false equivalence. What is happening here is not the same as what happened during the Trump administration, where they took babies out of the arms of their mothers and deported their families and permanently traumatized these children, some of whom we don't know will ever be reunified with their family again.
So let's just stop there again, because she does create a false equivalence. Now, to the people that say, and there is a technical truth here, which is that Biden is not doing zero tolerance, which Trump did, which is like literally charging anybody who comes and separating the families there, right? But also, that only lasted for several months in 2018 under Trump. Trump wasn't even doing that all the years, right? So, like, and the real problem here is that the child separation is happening because of now Title 42, which is we're going to use COVID as an excuse to not deal with asylum seekers. We're just and Trump started that, absolutely, and that's where this surge started. If you look at why it started last year. But Biden is deciding to keep it going, and there's no justification. Go ahead.
Yeah, but she's referencing the initial child separation policy that wasn't Title 42 that was put in place by Jeff Sessions in the early era of the Trump administration, which didn't happen for as long as what you're saying. But yes, Biden is continuing the Title 42 in terms of COVID restrictions years later that Trump put in place.
Right. And that's a continuity. So like between Trump and Biden. So by her emphasizing immediately the differences between the two, she's obscuring that continuity, which is the most urgent one right now, which is that we need to start processing asylum seekers at the border and stop using COVID as an excuse to not deal with them.
Yes, but to be fair to that position, I think you're correct. But I think what she's referencing there is the initial Jeff Sessions era policy.
She is. Yeah, I she definitely is. And it's right to say that Biden hasn't done that. But it's a bit misleading because also like that's not the entirety of even the Trump administration policy. Right.
Yes.
It's like it's going after the worst of Trump administration, which is all bad. Right.
Right. If we're looking at the past year, Biden is continuing the Title 42 separation policy, which basically ended asylum, which is illegal under U.S. and international law at the border under the guise of protecting the country from COVID. And then Biden adjusted it so that, OK, we won't basically block all asylum seekers from coming into the country. If you're a child, you can come in.
Mm-hmm.
Effectively does separate children.
Right. And it's just like it's this Title 42 thing is such a menace, because you talk about the perception of authoritarianism getting brought in through COVID response. And that's literally what is happening. We are using COVID as an excuse to harden the border, even though that's not safe. What we're doing by warehousing these people is not what you would want to be doing. You'd want to send them along their way to their ultimate destination here so they can distance and, you know,
document it, do an administrative exercise and make sure that you have all the paperwork in place. But it doesn't need to be a carceral system, which I don't think she emphasized enough in this clip.
Yeah, I think we kind of hit the points there. That's the problem. And I think really the limitation here is this is how far we have to go, particularly, I mean, the idea like within the Democratic Party, like it's just that she has to stress that you know, equivalence or false equivalence or whatever you want to call it there, immediately after saying the correct thing, which is this is a bipartisan problem that goes back to us treating the border as a criminal, a carceral problem and not an administrative one for basically our lifetimes. And until we undo that and let people move past through our border more easily, these problems are going to remain. And that's the truth that she embedded at the beginning of the clip there. And the emphasis afterwards is that's the Democratic Party and, you know, she's part of it. And ultimately, like, I love a lot of the stuff she's doing in with regards to Puerto Rico self-determination and her agitation on things like the infrastructure bill. This is just one of the limitations. Until we have a base of power outside of this party, this is what you get with Democrats.
Exactly. I mean, to me, it again, there's these are like extremely minor, I think, critiques. And like I sent this clip, we don't even need to play it. But she did go on to talk about the underlying contributions of United States foreign policy that destabilized South America, which led to what the exact conditions that we're seeing now. So that's a holistic perspective that you see in 40 people currently in power in the federal government. And I'm being generous there. So what we're talking about, though, is the limitations of electoral politics and being a part of the Democratic Party. And
right.
So she can be bumping up against that ceiling on a regular basis, and I think she does and deserves a lot of credit because it is a brave position, especially given what she experiences from the right wing and people on the dumb left as well. But then you just you watch her dancing this line and you're like, OK, that there is a lot more criticism that could be leveled here that would be effective as well.
And yeah, I think a broader problem is, you know, I like some of the vocabulary she uses, but like say like American imperialism, right? But when you tie that to an outcome, like children being warehoused at the border and not a policy like Title 42, then I worry that it serves to naturalize these things. Like, oh, well, if it's this is just American imperialism, well, that's a pretty, how are we going to undo American imperialism? Joe Biden could get rid of Title 42 right now, and we could start processing asylum seekers as we should be doing, and this problem would be go away. I mean, it wouldn't go away. Like I said, the bipartisan carceral approach to the border that has been going on for decades is ultimately what needs to go away. But this immediate crisis right now, with the you know people being held in these facilities, that is a policy choice.
So your critique, and I would think, you know, again, we didn't see the full thing, so. Is more just like the focus should be on Title 42 right now.
Yes, I think it should be on Title 42 and other immediate like policies. Like I think the invoking, you know, capitalism and imperialism, I think that stuff is good, but I think it's too superfluous. It doesn't do anything to Joe Biden, right? Or the party. So you need to Title 42 is white supremacy. Title 42 is imperialism. You know, we can't go back and undo the wars that we've done in Central America or supported, right? Or death squads or whatever. We should undo some of the economic stuff we're doing. But right now, Title 42 just needs to be getting rid of.
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of sympathy for her having to dance this fine line, especially given the hate that she receives. But I think that's a fair critique. And I think we're not hearing enough from her about abolish ICE as we heard during the Trump years. And like, that's a fair critique. Again, where I think that this is all criticisms under, I think, an important umbrella of what she's fighting for is right. And she's on the right side of pretty much every issue. It's just, this is how are we going to critique politicians who are operating within elected position, because electoral politics has its limitations. And I think some of these critiques are what highlights that. I don't know if you'd agree with that, Matt.
Yeah. I mean, I think she categorically needs to feel heat about this. But I don't think it needs to be the type of radioactive heat that I think comes with basically questioning the entire, you know, her entire ability to deliver anything. Because I think, you know, I mean, yeah, like I don't know what there really is to say beyond that. Like this is bad. This is the Democratic Party saying, we don't believe you need more people, basically, and through her mouth. But ultimately, it's not going to be her heroic effort that changes that. It's going to be actually pressure and taking more power figure out how to leverage that power more effectively. And I don't think AOC is going to spearhead the socialist revolution. I never did. And so I think the people that focus so much her on a heroic or villainous individual kind of don't have the right understanding of the type of politics that are going to take her.
She couldn't, Matt. I mean, that's just like
exactly
the reality of electoral politics. I mean, that's I think that's an interesting, nuanced conversation for sure. All right, shall we head into the fun half?
Yeah, it's funny people that are saying I'm sounding like Jimmy Dore. Like, that is absolutely, I think, like, yeah, we can get into the fun, but that is funny to me.
Who's saying that?
Just chat.
On the chat? Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I, like, come on, guys. Matt has, like, that's not what Matt's saying at all. That's just not fair. So, and you can't, like, critique is allowed, especially, and we praise and did praise Ocasio-Cortez yesterday or the day before for pushing Biden on the infrastructure package significantly. It's just that this critique needs to also be a push as opposed to kind of a let's not be drawing false equivalences here.
I don't want to repeat myself. Let's just go to the fun half. But we should do plugs now.
Sorry. God, I need, like, Sam has all these sticky notes here that I can't even read them. I need my own sticky notes that say plugs.
Yeah, so last night we had Brian Box Brown talked about, you know, I booked him to bring us through some of the shenanigans going on with legalization, like how they say we're pro a sort of diversity and inclusion until that develops along an economic line. But Andrew Cuomo and New York State released their legalization plan, and it's actually much better than you would expect. And that's probably because Cuomo needed to pull something out of his ass. Like, basically, New York had this basically gold standard for legalization, had been sitting in around collecting dust since 2013 while Cuomo tried to get his, you know, BS corporate legalization plan passed instead. Well, now that isn't going to fly because he's at his political, like, nadir. And so the good one got passed. And so we talked a little bit about that and how that might implicate some of the other stuff going around, particularly in the Northeast with corporations. So patreon.com/leftreckoning, but go subscribe, YouTube, Left Reckoning. I want a lot of people to be going to subscribe to the YouTube page because we want to get to 10,000 for some reason. I don't know why. It's a meaningless metric, but it feels important.
No, I mean, it's a milestone. I'm going to call into the phones right now. All right. Yes, everybody go to Left Reckoning, subscribe. Call in to the phones. We'll be taking your calls. We'll be taking your IMs. And let's have some fun. Let's boogie on this casual Friday.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Some good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457.
2, 38, 56, 27, 1 half, 5 eighths, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's I wanna just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me.
Hey, shut up!
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.